And we start with 2-3 trees, which are a prelude to red leg trees. And you can find the 2-3 trees in the Isabel distribution in that subdirectory. And how are they defined? They have two kinds of nodes. Well, of course, they have leaves, empty trees, and they also have binary nodes, but they also have ternary nodes. So this is the... Oops, where is it? There. Node 3 contains a tree, one element, another tree, another element, and a third tree. And as in the binary search trees, we assume that all the elements in there are less than that element, and all the elements there are bigger than that element, and less than this, and all the elements in there are bigger than that element. And we use the usual abbreviations. This is a 2-node, and this is a 3-node with the two elements A and B, and the left subtree, the middle subtree, and the right subtree. The isIn function is unsurprising. You recursively go down the tree and you compare the elements, in this case in the 3-node, you compare the elements in some order, the x that you're looking for. Say you compare it first with the a, and then if it's less than the a, you descend into the left subtree. If it's equal, you found it, and otherwise you compare it with b. And if it's less than, then you descend into the middle subtree. If it's equal, you found it, and otherwise you descend into the rightmost subtree. So nothing surprising here. And we assume the usual ordering invariant, which I have not bothered to write down. The structural invariant that we want for the 2-3 trees is that all the leaves are at the same level. So this is a little bit better than the binary trees, where you can't achieve that. Sometimes with binary trees you have to have leaves at two different levels, but just one level apart. Here with the 2-3 trees you can actually achieve a perfect balance. You can always, well, that's something we will show, we can always achieve that all the leaves are at the same depth. And this is the formalization of that invariant. Of course, here, if there's just one leaf, that's certainly true. And if you have a binary node, then both subtrees must be balanced and they must have the same height. And if you have a ternary node, then all three subtrees must be balanced and they must all three have the same height. So a simple recursive formulation of this idea here, all leaves are at the same level. And then you get a little lemma that if a tree is balanced in that sense, then usually it's expressed the logarithm of the height is bounded by, the height is bounded by the logarithm of the size. I don't think we want to prove this. This is not terribly exciting, and it's not very different from what we've seen before. Now comes insertion. So you now have to deal with binary and ternary nodes, and the idea of insertion is quite simple. If you have a leaf, you make it a binary node. If you have a binary node and insert, then it may turn into a ternary node, so you still have space. But what happens if you have a ternary node? Well, then things may overflow. So then it may actually happen that you have to pass an element back up the tree. You can no longer achieve this perfect balance. You can imagine that if the tree is already perfectly balanced and everything is a ternary node, then if you insert one more element, it's just going to blow up. You can't make it perfectly again. You have to pass something up. So this is the situation that we have to face here. So that means your insertion function will not just return a tree, it'll return a tree plus the information, has this tree overflown or not. And so these are the two possible return values. we just say, it's fine, I could insert that element and the height of the tree did not change, then I will return this compound value where T is a constructor and the little I is just a reminder that currently we're talking about insertion. So I'll just pronounce this as T. So T of little t means I'm a tree and I haven't changed my size. And if the tree overflows, then you pass back up to the caller of the insertion function and a constructor up with three arguments, which says, well, I've overflown and the x is the element that I had to pass back up. And there are two subtrees, L and R, and they are fine. But you now have to somehow reassemble that into a tree of the right balance further up. So you can think of this as the tree with element x in the middle and two subtrees, L and R, but if you do that, then it would be a tree that's one too high. So that's why it's really we're passing back up these separate components and they will be reassembled, hopefully, when we go up the tree and preserve the previous height of the tree. And so this is the data type that we will be returning from the insertion function. Either it's this T constructor of a normal tree, or it's the up constructor of a triple tree element tree. And then we will redefine a little function tree that turns one of these returned values into a normal tree. And if it is already a normal tree, you don't do much to it. And here you assemble it into this binary node. But remember, this has grown one element, so you have to be careful. So now, how does insertion work? Well, insertion just calls an auxiliary function. So it calls the ins function where all the work happens. So this is the one that goes recursively down the tree. And then it comes back with one of these up values here. And then it converts it back into a tree. And at the very top, it's perfectly fine to convert it to a tree that's one larger, because somehow the tree has to grow. It's just you can't, in the middle, you shouldn't be doing that, because then it upsets the balance. But at the top, you're allowed to do that, because then the balance of the two subtrees is guaranteed by the recursion, and you're just adding one more element of top on the top, and everything is fine. So here it's perfectly okay to use this tree function. Remember, this is what the tree function does. It just converts the up element into a normal tree. So what does ins do? Ins takes an element and a tree and returns one of these up values, which then have to be treated in the calls above. So the simplest case is if you insert an element into a leaf, then indeed the tree has grown. You have to communicate that to the caller, and you return this up value where you explicitly, the up constructor, tells the caller something has grown, the height has grown, and the two subtrees are empty, and the element is just the element that you put into the tree. So, morally, you're constructing that tree, but you're also telling the caller, beware, the tree has grown. From initially the empty tree to now a tree of height 1. So if you have a binary node, what do you do? Let's think about that. surfing. Insert of X into L A R. So of course we first compare X with A. Case compare X A of, and so we have we will only consider one possibility. It's less than, so that means it's in that it belongs into that subtree. So we recursively go there, and we look at what comes back. Case insert X into L of. And then, of course, there's the simple case where no overflow occurred. You just are returning a normal tree of the same height. And then you can just, let's call this one L prime, because it's the result of changing L. And then you just insert the L prime where the L was. So you return the tree L prime, A, and R. No problem. The interesting case is this one, of course, L1, B, L2. So what do we do now? So this is where you can use the convenience of having a three node and turn the two node into a three node. So you return L1, B, L2, A, R, right? Yeah. Yes. Okay. So this is again an easy case. And the of course, equality is obvious what you do, and greater than is just dual to less than, so we don't need to look at those in any detail. But we need to look at the, so this hopefully is what we've written down. Oh yeah, right. So there should be, in both cases, I forgot the, this one is fine, so we just need the T constructor, and this one is fine as well. We need to give that because we have to pass an up value, I mean, a value of type up to the caller. Now, more interesting is the case if you're inserting into a three node. So I won't copy that one again, but for completeness I will. Insert X into L A M B R equals, and then we again compare the X with the A. CMP, I think it's called this. And we again look at just the less than case. And we insert the X into the left subtree, and then we have two choices. If the height hasn't changed, well, that's great, then we can just return the modified tree with L prime A M B R, and of course, in different cases, this one. If it overflowed, so I could tell you that we will overflow, but what will we return? Now, the thing you have to understand is that what we want to return is a triple of a left and the right subtree of the same height. So we can't just put arbitrary things into L and R and then an element in the middle. So how do we construct those?
We construct a binary node which has two binary nodes as its binary nodes where the four subgrids which are...
What is in the middle?
In the middle should be
B. And then I think it's almost, if B is in the middle, then of course A has to be on... A should be in the middle. And then B has to be here, and then C has to be here, and then I think everything else follows from that. So we have to have L1 and L2, I guess. And then around the B, we have to have M and R. Let's see. And this is precisely what we have there. Yep. And just informally, let's check that this this is this informal invariant we haven't explicitly written down yet. We have the balance invariant. Yes, of course, that the balance is maintained. So these two should have the same. They should be balanced. Well, that comes because they're called. They are returned from something that's supposed to preserve balance, and in particular, they should have the same height. Why do they have that? Because this overflowed. So this is the result of overflowing. So the two subtrees should have the same height as the original tree that we passed in. And this is the overflow. The element that overflowed, and so this should be one bigger than the original. The whole thing should be one higher than the original tree, and so yes, and this is then the original tree L, yes, is one higher than the original tree L, so it's as high as the full node. That full node here, and that's the same height as this node here. So yes, everything fits together. And we will go in detail through that again later on. So this is the thing that we want to prove about the insertion function, that it preserves the balance invariant. As I said last time, the fact that it turns a binary search tree, well, in this case, it turns a 2-3 tree into a binary 2-3, a search tree into a search tree where everything is ordered, that's so immediate from the code, it can be, it's obvious to everybody, and it can be proved very, it can be proved automatically, so we're not going to bother about that, and that insertion really adds that element. The code is so clear that it's really a waste of our time going through the details. But this is not so completely clear. I hand wave a little bit to explain why it should work, but let's see that it really does work. So this is what we're going to prove. Now, that, of course, is just... Why do we want to prove this here? Because this is the definition of the insertion function. Remember, this is how the insertion function is defined. The top-level insertion function calls the recursive ins function and then turns the result into a normal tree. And so that's why we have to prove what we want to prove here. And the proof is fairly straightforward by induction on T. But there's a little little trick there. So proof by induction T. And we will just look at some subcases. So we look at the, of course, not at the leaf case, we look at the case where it's a proper the two node will be sufficient. And we look at the subcase where the element that we want to insert, the A, is less than X. And we look at the subcase where the returned the return subtree is of the form T. So essentially we're looking at this piece of code, we're looking at inserting element into this, except that A and X have changed names. So we're looking at this subcase, and then we're looking at the less than subcase, and then we're looking at the subcase where the insert function returns a tree. Case insert of what are we inserting here? In the statement, we're inserting an A. Inserting an A into the left subtree gave us back a normal tree. And that should all be pretty easy, but let's see what happens. So we can assume from all of these cases, we can assume that that T is balanced, that's our assumption on the left here, and that means the left subtree is balanced and the right subtree is balanced, and the height of the left subtree is equal to the height of the right subtree. So I'm just using this assumption here, and because we're in this case, I can expand the assumption to that. So that's what we have. And what we need to show, we want to show that the balancedness of what is returned from the code. Remember, where are we in the code? We're here in the code. We're inserting into a binary node, and we're in the less than case, and we're just returning a key of a binary node with the left subtree modified. So this is what we return, we will suppose. And then we call the, because what we're trying to prove is this lemma, we call the tree function on the thing which just removes the T constructor and gives us back the tree L prime X, no, A, sorry, A and R. And when is that balanced? So we have to show that, L prime, but what is L prime? What I really mean, it's the result of that insertion function. Okay, so that's the same as saying we have to prove balance of L prime and balance of R prime and height of L prime equals height of R prime. Let me just see. Yes? Thank you. So, of course we get balance of R from our assumption here. So that's one. How do we get balance of L prime? We have the induction hypothesis that tells us this, but that still leaves this. Why is the height of L prime the same as the height of R? And we can't conclude that at the moment. What we're proving is too weak. We are just proving that the thing is balanced, but we're not proving that what is returned from the insertion function satisfy certain height constraint. And so the insertion function may have done silly things with it, may have returned something that's balanced, but which is much deeper than what was originally in the tree. So this is a typical situation, that's what I wanted to demonstrate it, where you start out to prove something, which is what you really need, but then you find in the process, oh, it's too weak, I have to prove something else. And in this case, you have to prove something in addition. You have to prove simultaneously two things, because if you try to prove them separately, it just won't work, and they require each other. So you really need to define, is it on the slide? So really, you need another height function, because the complication is the thing that's being returned from the insertion function is not a normal tree, it's one of these up values, and so in order to talk about its height, we need another additional overloaded height function, so we have the height on normal 2-3 trees, and now we also have a height on up values, and the definition at first may look a bit odd. The first line is pretty uncontentious. This is just a normal tree, so its height is the height of t. Why do we say this here? That looks odd. What we're saying here is that the height of this value, it gives us back the height of the original tree that we put in. If you think about it, this is the result of an insert function call that overflowed. So it will return two subtrees that are of the original height and one more element that flowed out of it. And so this function is telling me what is the height of the original tree that gave rise to these two values. And here the height hasn't changed, so you can just take the height of the t. And here the height has changed, and you return the height of the original tree. And now, if you understand that intuition, then you can also understand why we're saying this here. Now we're saying the height of the insert hasn't changed. That looks funny, but we're not. This height here is on an up value defined like this, and so here you're really talking about the height of the thing that was put into the insertion function, and indeed that should be the height of what you passed in. If you have that as an additional assumption in your induction that you're now performing, so then this follows from the additional induction hypothesis that you will get, because now, induction hypothesis for the left subtree, so you'll get another induction hypothesis. Let's call this induction hypothesis prime, and that will say for the left subtree that h of ints of, we're inserting a into the left subtree, that is the same as h of the left subtree. And now, h of ints of al, is this, so this is equal to this, so therefore h of this thing here, but h of this thing here is just L prime, is equal to that h of L. Hooray, that's what we needed. And we also have that h of L is equal to h of R. So now we have from there to there as is required here. The implication is the other way around. So the complication here is twofold. You need to understand that you needed an additional property to be proved simultaneously, and that this additional property required actually to define an additional function and define it in the right manner So this isn't completely straightforward. It requires a certain amount of thinking about it. But then once, the nice thing is, once you've found all of these definitions, things are automatic. It's so as you can see, I'm hardly making any complicated arguments here, but you have to find the definitions. And then you get that if the tree is balanced, then the insertion will also give you a balanced tree, because insert is just that here.
Questions about that?
Deletion, well, the basic idea is quite simple. A three node may become, if it underflows, it may become a two node. But if a two node underflows, then you may actually have to decrease the height of the tree, and you may have to signal this to the caller. And what you then do is, when you have an underflow, then you pass a tree back up that needs to be merged with one of the siblings on the way up. And so we have two possible return values. One is height is unchanged, everything is fine. Now it's the T with subscript D for deletion, the constructor, or the height has decreased, let's call it again up, but with a D subscript, meaning the height has decreased. And that means we have an up value, which is either of this form or of this form. And we have, again, this tree function that converts an up value back into the original tree. And here it's a triviality. Here we don't need to, we can just project out the tree. And now, how does the deletion function work? Well, as for the previous insertion, it's a top-level function that calls a recursive function. So you call a del function that returns one of these up values, and then you convert it back into a tree. And the del function is the one that deletes an element from the tree and returns one of these up values. Remember, one of these values, either this value or that value. And if you delete something from the empty tree, it's still the empty tree and nothing has changed, so it's just a normal tree. And if you delete something from an binary node where both subtrees are empty, well, if you're really deleting that element, then you have to say, oops, the tree shrunk, because I had a tree of depth 1 and now I have a tree of depth 0, namely the empty tree. That's what I'm passing back, telling the caller the height has decreased. Or if it wasn't the same, then you can just leave the that single node as it was and say everything is fine. And the same with the ternary node of that form. And by the way, and finally, the interesting case is the delete function for a binary node with arbitrary subtrees. So here we deleted a function from a binary and ternary node where we assume we're almost at the bottom, everything below is empty. And so now we're covering the case where L and R are non-empty. And so you compare, and if it's less than A, then you have to delete it from the left subtree, and then you have to rebuild. And all the case distinctions happen in this rebuilding action that take a modified left subtree, an element, and a right subtree. Here we have, if it's greater than, so if you go into the right subtree and delete in there, then it's dual. You have a function called node 21, 22. And otherwise, you have the usual operation that if it's equal, well, you can't just remove that element. If x and a are equal, you can't, you have to do something about removing the a. You have to fetch something. In this case, we're fetching something from the right subtree. We're splitting the right subtree into its minimal element and the remaining tree, and then we combine that again into a bigger tree. And so what is node 2.1? It says I'm supposed to create a 2-node, and in the first argument there is an up value rather than a tree. So that's similarly for node 2.2, I'm creating a 2-node, and in the second argument I'm getting an up value rather than a tree. So let's figure out what node 2.1 should be doing. Everything that you see on the slide is pretty much, follows more or less canonically. But what is this node 2.1 doing? This is the nice situation where we got something backwards, where the height has not changed, and so we can just return that tree and signal that nothing changed with a T constructor. Of course, you could also get an up value, meaning I have decreased in height. And then there's nothing we can do at this point. We just have to pass that decrease of size up. And what is the tree? How do we build the tree? It should be a balanced tree, but of course one that's a bit smaller. I mean, not as high as the original one. Oh, right. That doesn't work. We need a case distinction on the right side. We're making a case distinction here, whether it's unchanged or decreased in height, and then we have two cases on what the R, depending on what R looks like. A 3-node, and it's pretty clear in which order things have to go in. Sorry. L prime, A, R1, B, R2. And they will be of the right height because this is one smaller than the original left node, but we are also the original right node we have now decomposed into subtrees, so this will also be smaller than the original right node, and so everything will be of the same depth now. And then there's the possibility that this is a 3-node. Claiming we can actually build a nicely balanced and tree of the same depth as the original tree. So, what do we do? and this is the situation where I said you have to merge what's being passed up, the L prime, with some siblings further up. So we have two binary nodes. Okay, let's just write that down. And from what's in the middle?
B
is in the middle, and the rest should follow. If B is in the middle, then we have to have R1 here. And then, of course, there should be an A, and there should be the L prime. And we should have here what's to the right of B, namely R2, C, R3 here. Yep. So let's see if this is what, I think the code is there. Yes, it's just with different names, but otherwise it's precisely that. And now you have to again convince yourself, or make proofs, that this is again a balanced tree that you're putting together there. And everything else, they note 2-2 is dual to 2-1. Now, deletion preserves balance, I'm not going to go through, why not? It's not a difficult proof, but it's a lengthy proof. You have to have 13 lemmas. Well, sometimes you can combine some of these lemmas. I try to prove how you do inductive proofs of the form some T is balanced, then some property 1 of T follows, and you can also prove that if the tree is balanced, then some property P2 of T follows. And you can either prove them separately, or you could prove them simultaneously with an AND. And I prefer to separate it, because typically the more complicated your formula is that you're proving, the more complicated your proof gets. So I try to pull those apart. But that means those 13 lemmas, somebody else may have turned them into 7 lemmas, because lots of things can be combined. And in the end, you do get the analogous thing that we had earlier, that if the tree is balanced, then the recursive del function, when you turn it into a tree, it's again balanced, and therefore delete is also balanced. So it's not per se difficult, it's just typically it takes a couple of iterations until we've got all the lemmas together. Now, why do we do 2-3 trees? Well, that will become clear in a moment. Just you can continue that if you want. You can also define a 2-3-4 tree, which has 3 different kinds of non-leaves. And it's very much the same as the 2-3 tree, but you have many more cases. And both of these are special cases of the much-loved B trees, and also AB trees, and I'm sure that you've heard at least of one of these two variants. And the real reason why I'm why I'm introducing 2-3 trees is because they are the idea behind red-black trees. So we will now move on to red-black trees, but some authors introduce red-black trees like some magic device that they pull out of a hat, and I don't like that. I'm trying to motivate why the red-black trees are the way they are, and the motivation is that they are really 2-3 trees in disguise. And you can again find them in the distribution of the Isabel system. And the idea is we're using 2-3-4 trees rather than 2-3 trees, so I'm introducing 2-3 trees because they are the simpler version of the 2-3-4 trees, and the red-black trees, so I misspoke, the red-black trees are really 2-3-4 trees in disguise, namely coded as binary trees. So you intuitively you have 2-3-4 trees, but you code them as binary trees. And you use the color to express the grouping, because you now have to compose multiple binary nodes to get a ternary or a what is that? Ternary after that? It's quaternions. Quaternary, no, that doesn't sound right. I'm not sure. Pardon? Pardon? I've never heard that word. a four node. So on the left-hand side we have the 2, 3, 4 nodes, and on the right-hand side they're encoding. Well, if it's an empty tree, it remains an empty tree. If it's a binary node, it remains a binary node. If it's a ternary node, then we can code it as nested binary nodes, either like this or like this. And I'm now already using the color, namely the color red, to indicate that the subnode here is really part of a bigger node. It's not a separate thing, but it's part of a bigger thing. And if you have a four node, then you can code this as nested binary node. And red means I'm part of a bigger node. So this is really the way you should view these red-black trees. The red-black trees are really the thing on the right-hand side, and here, if you see a red-black tree of this form, this is what it's encoding. If you see a red-black tree of this form or that form, this is what it's encoding. And then the invariance on the red-black tree, that can be particularly magical if you don't understand this correspondence, they come out quite naturally. So these are the forms that we will be seeing in the red-black trees. And this is the intuitive idea that you should have in your head. So what are the structural invariants? The root should be what color? So red, black means it's the top node, and red means I'm part of something above me. So what is the root? Of course, the root should be black because it's not part of anything, it's at the very top. This is something that makes sense when you see the next one. We could also consider the leaves as black nodes. And if a node is red, what would you expect of the nodes above or below it? Yes. But that's not the intuitive thing that you would say.
Intuitively, if you say it is part of the bigger node, then the one above has to be black, otherwise you could just compile larger node.
Yes, so the intuitive thing would be to say above is a black node, but that's you can't express that easily if you write a recursive function, because then you already at that node and you can't look at where you came from, or rather it becomes complicated. It's much simpler to look at below, and then we can use what you suggested. I think if you are a red node, then everything below has, the thing immediately below has to be black, and that's the dual way or version of expressing that. And then, of course, this also forces the leaves to be black. And finally, something about the depth or height or whatever you want to call it. If any path from a node to these leaf has to have a certain, same number of what?
Same number of black nodes?
Yeah, because if you expand out the if you reassemble the red nodes into the black ones, then they become 2, 3, 4 nodes, and then this is just another way of saying it's balanced in the 2, 3, 4 model, because the number of black nodes really are the number of 2, 3, 4 nodes. The red nodes don't really count, they're just subsidiary nodes. Right, so this is the invariant that you want, and hopefully I've been able to motivate it. So now we introduce, for the real definitions, two colors, red and black, and a data type. And here's a mistake. So this color field, so the red black tree can be a leaf or it can be a node consisting of color, subtree, element, subtree. This color node, this color field should not be the first argument of node, but it should come here as the third argument, so that in the middle you have the information that you're storing in the node and the color node. So there's a typo here. And then we introduce some abbreviations, as usual, this one. And this one, if we write node, we can also write this for tuple. And here we have, here the C field is in the right place, the color field. So in the middle you have the element and the color, and can be abbreviated like that. And finally, instead of writing this rather lengthy, even if you write this and C is red, it's much easier to write this, R of LAR. And similarly for black, you just write B of LAR. Color? Okay. Ah, yes, we need a bit of some auxiliary functions. This just projects out the color of a node. It projects out the color, and if it's a leaf, then it's just by definition a black leaf. And then we have a function paint that forces a certain color on a tree, so the top node is colored. If you paint the leaf, well, you can't paint the leaf, they are always black. There's nothing you can do about it. And if you want to paint a node with some color, well, you simply insert that color into the color field. So now the structural invariants on the red black tree, and there are the full structural invariant, RBT, I'm a red black tree. And it's decomposed into two sub-invariants, the color invariant and the height invariant. So let's just, and the start that says the root of the tree is black. So let's go back and remind ourselves what these things are supposed to be. Right, here we have the root is black, we have dealt with that. And then we have the color invariant, that is these two things. Well, here we don't really have to say much, but this is what we really have to express in the color invariant, and this is the height invariant. All paths from a node to a leaf have the same number of black nodes. Right, so color invariant, height invariant, and root must be black. Okay, color invariant, that's this one. The leaf is always satisfies the color invariant because by definition it's black, as it should be. And if you have a node of L and R and a color C, then the two subnodes should satisfy the color invariant. And if the color of that node is red, then the color of the left and the color of the right subtree should be black. So that's just in formula what we wrote down earlier. And the height invariant, now remember it said from every node, every path from a node to a leaf should have the same black height, the same number of black nodes. So this is what we say. If it's a leaf, it's by definition, it satisfies the color invariant, the height invariant, because, yeah, there's nothing to say about it. And if you have a node with left and right subtree, they both have to satisfy the height invariant, and the black height of L must be equal to the black height of R. So this is now a somewhat clever way of expressing the fact that all the path from that node to a leaf must have the same number of black nodes. So the black height is simply the number of black nodes in those subtrees on any path. So we are here assuming that there is a unique black height, because otherwise the original invariant said every path from a node to a leaf has the same number of black nodes. But we're not talking about every path here, we're just talking about a unique black height. And the fact that it's a recursive definition will enforce that it works for all the paths, because here we enforce it, if it has to hold for a node, it has to hold for both subtrees. And that's how we make sure that it's really a unique number. So what is the black height? The black height is simply you go along one path in the tree and count the number of black nodes on that path. So the black height takes the tree and gives you black the number of black nodes. So here BH is the same as B height. I've just abbreviated it. And if it's a leaf, the black height is zero. And if it's a tree, a node, I mean, then you just count, in fact, the black height of the leftmost path in that tree. So you just look at the left subtree, and if the color of that node here that you're looking at is black, then it's the black height of the left subtree plus one, and otherwise it's the black height of the left subtree, because the node is not black. And so here it looks a bit strange, because you originally said every path, and now just considering one path, but because you're doing it for all the subtrees, it comes out correctly. That may not be completely obvious, but in the end, we don't really need to worry about this, because in the end, all we need this for is that we will get a certain relationship between the size and the height for red black trees, and that's what we're really interested in. And this color invariant is just an auxiliary invariant that helps us to prove this size and height relationship. So, the more questions on this one? Then let's look at what we really want to get out at the end, that the height of the tree is bounded by 2 times the logarithm of the size of the tree, well, of the size of the tree, the number of leaves of the tree. So size plus one. And now I need a bit more space.
Well, actually,
yeah, I think I do. I don't want to use this. Well, I could start out here. One more. Okay. So this will follow from two lemmas. Lemma one is, if you have a red black tree, then this isn't quite right. You have to modify it. How should it be? How should the correct version look? That's correct. You could modify it like this, but that wouldn't help you. You can maintain this relationship and modify it arithmetically a little bit, and then it becomes correct. Yeah.
The height has to be less than equal to the double the back height.
Yeah. Why? Because the black height, in the worst case, may count only every second node, because you always have a red node in addition to the black node. So this will, if you multiply it, then it'll come out right. Except I'm not 100% sure this will work, because it really, we're talking about natural numbers here, and so really what I did prove is this one, diff 2. And of course, diff 2 behaves funnily on the odd and even numbers, so I would have to think about it, whether I can just multiply by 2 and get the corresponding one out of it. Maybe yes, but maybe not. It's like the subtraction on natural numbers, you always you may go wrong. So I'm writing this one down because that's the one I proved. The other one may be just as true. But yeah. And then we have a lemma 2, which says, under the same assumption, we have that 2 to the black height of a tree is less or equal to the number of leaves in the tree. And if you have those two, then this one above will follow quite easily. So proof of lemma. Well, let's write it down. So you have 2 to the height of the tree. I will write instead, well, this 2 is less or equal 2 to the black height of the tree. Yep, that follows from lemma 1. And this one is less or equal the number of leaves. So this is L1, and this is L2. And now you can just take logarithms on both sides, and you have height of t if 2 is less or equal log 2 of number of leaves. And now, so it should follow. I obviously have been multiplied by 2 and it worked. I think I should have been able to do it with 2 times up there as well. So this is very easy. That's just putting together a few inequalities. And the difficulty comes when you prove lemma 1 or lemma 2. Why is that tricky? In general, why is it tricky to prove anything of the form, if something is a red-black tree, then something else? Let's look at the definition of red-black tree. This is the definition, and it's somehow very special. Here, this is recursive, great, this is recursive, but this only says the root node is black. So that's a special case. And so if you try to prove something by induction and that thing contains the predicate RBT, it won't work nicely because it'll then in the subcases you will have to prove that something is a black node, but it doesn't have to be a black node, it could be a red one. So you can prove these two properties nicely inductively, but you have to treat this one specially. And so that means in our two lemmas here, we shouldn't try and prove this, but we should replace it with the two recursive invariants. So this should become that's it. So here, RBT of T becomes invariant color of T and invariant height of T. And the red-black tree, of course, implies this, and in fact, you can just replace it. This, if you replace RBT by these two invariants, then this will now go through automatically by induction, and probably, I'm not sure, maybe you need both parts, maybe only the height. No, I think you need both parts. And then the induction works. What happens here if you replace in lemma one, you replace RBT by, again, the same thing as below. Then suddenly it doesn't work anymore. It's slightly wrong. So this just becomes wrong. If you try to replace RBT by these two, then the first invariant isn't true anymore. The quick check will find a counterexample. And the reason is that this only really holds if the tree is black at the root. So the generalized version does not work. And for the generalized version, you need to modify the statement. And so it becomes really quite ugly. You need to prove L1 prime. And that now says, if you have, you can clearly see it. This becomes wrong if you take a red node which has just an element in it and two empty subtrees. That is a counterexample to this one. So what you have to do is you have to say invariant color of T and invariant. I think you need both. Invariant height of T implies, and now you have to be a bit more careful here, and I will give you the if. Sorry, where are we? Yes. So I've converted this here to this here. So it's still div2 and the black height, but here, if the color of T is black, then we can use the original height of T. And otherwise, if it's a red node, what should go here? Yep. And maybe there is some clever way of writing this without this case decision. I didn't find it. And then this one now goes through, I think, pretty much automatically. And this is just to alert you to the fact that with these red-black trees, the inductive proofs, you can't just do the induction with the original red-black tree predicate in it, but you have to use the inductive, the recursively defined functions, invariant color, invariant height, and then sometimes you need to distinguish, well, is it black or is it red? So. Yeah, I think we can still do the insertion. So similar to before, the insert function doesn't do much. It calls the recursive ins function that inserts it into a red black tree, and then it paints the root node black, because that's just what the invariant requires. The root node has to be black, and it could be that what was returned further up was red, and then we just by force make that black, and that that in itself is not a bad thing. If you paint something, if something satisfied the invariant before and you paint it black, it'll still satisfy the invariant, but you're not going to do anything wrong by painting it black. And what's the insert function doing? Well, it has the same type, and if you insert it into an empty, if you insert an element into the empty tree, then you get the singleton red node, and the red node is necessary. That's now a similar indication of increased height, the red node. And yes, let's look at this one. If you insert an element to a black node, then this is where things can become ugly. Then you compare the element with the element in the middle, and you insert it either into the left or into the right subtree, and then afterwards you carry out a balancing function on this triple of the modified left subtree, the element, and the original right subtree. So why do we need this balancing function? It's because you may get red nodes from below, and that may lead to combinations of red and red that you have to get rid of. On the other hand, if it's a red node, and then you just leave it a red node, and you don't need to do this this adjustment, and that's because if it's a red node, it must be below some black node, and so it must be, this R must be below some B, and the insert function must have gone through the B first before it inserted it into the R part, and then the B part, that's where the balancing takes place, and you don't need to do any balancing here. And so all we need to do is to look at this part that gets rid of red-red combinations. So this takes a tree, an element, and a tree, and gives you back a tree, but one where the color is again adjusted. So ideally, you just want to do this, but the tree invariant, you don't want to have a red-red violation in L or R. So this is one possibility. If you have in the there are two balancing functions, and they know which part. So this R is unmodified, so it's fine. We don't need to check for any red-red violations in here. This part is the one that's modified. And similarly here, this part was modified, so here is where the problems may occur, and we have two different balancing functions that either look into this part or look into that part. And so this function we will only look at, and it checks for red-red violations in the first argument. And so how can a red-red violation in the first argument look like? It can be red at the top and another red below on the left side. And what we do is we simply turn the red one here into black, and we rebalance. So here we have what you can think of as a three node, and here we have some tree, and then we rebalance and shift part of that three node, namely the T3, shift that over to the T4, and then create one black node here, and another black node with the remainder, the T1, AT2, and the A2 moves into the middle, and it stays a red node. That's okay. The red node must have black subtrees, and that's what we have guaranteed here. And now you have to look very carefully whether all the heights are maintained, or rather you have to prove it. And on the other side, it's pretty much similar if here, if you have a red node on the top and in the right subtree you have another red node, then you also have to do rebalancing. It looks exactly the same, so the returned value is the same in both cases. It's just that the red subtree was once in the first argument and once in the second argument. But the otherwise, the argument is essentially the same. And the principle is you replace red, red by red, black. And the red, again, is it signals, well, yes, I may have changed, I have changed height. That's what the red signals. I need to be inserted into something. And if that red comes out at the, to the very top, then it's just painted black at the original call. And then, of course, there's another equation here that catches all other cases that just says, well, if you don't have a red-red violation in either of the two arguments, then you just put it together into a black tree. And as you can tell, I'm not really going to go through that. After a sequence of really simple lemmas, you get that it's a red-black tree, that insertion maintains that red-black tree. It's just that you again need to do the proofs using the sub-invariants, invariant on height and invariant on color, and you will get different little lemmas for those sub-invariants. And the proof isn't simple. I mean, this is the proof in the textbook. It takes, how many pages is it? 1, 2, 3, 4 pages is the proof for the insertion in a red-black tree. Now, one has to be fair, this is an imperative algorithm, so the argument is a bit more complicated than in a functional one where everything is just simple inductions. I'm not going to subject you to that. Deletion, yeah, I think we can still do deletion. It starts off the same. You call a recursive del function and then you paint the result black. And here's the code, and you can already see the code is getting a bit more complicated. So let's just look at this subpart here. You have a two, you have this. You have a node, you delete an element from it, you compare the element with the element in the middle, and if it's less than, and now you get these conditions. If left is not empty and the color is black, then you call some balance function on the delete and A and R, and otherwise you make it to red, into a red node. So there's, you again have some case distinctions here, like you had earlier, where you also have two cases. You insert into a black node or you insert into a red node, and you have either you need to do some balancing or you can just make it a red node. And here it's similar, except here it becomes, there's additional, here we are, there's the additional complication. Is one of the trees, if the left tree non-empty and the color of the left is black, then you do the balancing after the deletion, otherwise you just make it into a red node, and similarly for the greater than. So it's similar to the insertion function. All the trickery is in these balance function and in another combine function. So this is the, the complication is, I missed out this case, if they are equal, so if you delete from a node and you delete the element in the middle, then you just combine these two trees, but what does combine do? It's tricky code. So I don't really want to show it, discuss it here, and neither do I want to show or discuss all the proofs, because there are 12 short proofs, But the invariants are still to be are still a bit tricky. But then, I mean, yeah, this lemma is really a bit much. And I'm so what does it say? If you have a tree whose height that satisfies the height and the color invariant, then if you delete from it, it'll satisfy the height invariant. And if its color was red, then the black height of the delete is equal to the black height of the original, and it'll satisfy the color invariant. And if the color is black, then the black height is black height minus one, and some additional auxiliary color invariant holds. So it gets really a bit nasty here. It's not something you want to spend much time on in a lecture. It's just, there's too much detail here. And you can, at the end, you will get the nice theorem out there, but I think that's why we have a theorem prover, that you do not need to go through all of that by yourself, but you can rely on the theorem prover. And the fact that it's complicated is also, this is the code and the proofs in the Corman book for the delete function. So yeah, it is lengthy. And this is just the sources in the literature where these functions come from. Yep, so I think that brings us neatly to the end of this lecture, where I hope I have at least gotten the idea across that these red leg trees are these 2, 3, 4 trees in disguise, and how the insertion and deletion works on the 2, 3 trees. The simple variants of the 2, 3, 4 trees, the red leg trees are really a bit much for a lecture, at least the deletions. Right, then. Yeah, enjoy the tutorial and have a great weekend.